So I'm going to talk about type-based verification of JavaScript sandboxing. But first, you know, this is the problem that web sandboxes are out to solve, right? On many news sites, such as the Huffington Post, you'll find that they're integrated with social networking sites, such as Facebook. So there's clearly some sort of client-side content interaction going on, and it's happening in JavaScript. But long before there were social networks, there were ad networks. And so news sites, and in fact, much, you know, the bulk of the webs is supported by third-party ad networks. Now, these ads don't just display images. They don't just download cookies, but they also download JavaScript code into your web browser. So there's some basic questions we should be asking. First, you know, who is actually running code when you visit a website such as Huffington Post? So if you go view source here, you'll see that there's Quantcast, there's advertising.com. I don't know if these guys have your security and privacy as their primary goal in mind. We should also wonder what is it that JavaScript code running in the web browser can do. We saw some awesome attacks on embedded devices done by JavaScript code yesterday. Let me talk about some of the general things that you can do. So here's what happens when you visit a website. The host you visit downloads a bunch of JavaScript code into your web browser. It also directs third-party ad networks to download JavaScript code. And if you don't do anything, they both run in the same JavaScript context. Your web browser can't tell code from the ad network apart from code from the hosting site. And so the third-party code can do everything that the host website's code can do. So you think, let's stick this third-party code into an iframe and isolate it from the hosting page. You can do that, and it'll give you some protection. But even in the iframe, third-party JavaScript can, you know, fire up plugins, exploit flash vulnerabilities, perform drive-by downloads, set cookies, navigate the window, so on and so forth. So iframes are only a partial solution to this problem. So to really solve this problem, various companies have developed JavaScript sandboxes. Broadly, what these do is that they define safe sub-languages of JavaScript. And I want to first begin by giving a high-level view of how these web sandboxes work. So the first thing that happens is that web sandboxes don't allow completely arbitrary JavaScript code to run in your web browser. They all include a static verifier that rejects certain features as, you know, that universally rejects certain features as bad. Eval, for example, is rejected by practically all web sandboxes because it can be used to load arbitrary code. Now, there's many other features in JavaScript that are only conditionally unsafe. They're only unsafe if you call it in just the wrong kind of context with just the wrong kind of arguments. So these features, they aren't rejected outright, but instead they are replaced. Code is rewritten to use safe wrappers that employ assertions and runtime checks to make sure that the users of these features are safe. So where do these wrappers come from? Well, they're in some trusted library. So this is a well-established picture of web sandboxes. What I'm going to do now is reinstantiate the same picture with the specifics of AdSafe, which is the system we studied in detail. So AdSafe also has a static verifier. It's called JSLint. You might have seen it as a code quality tool. It also has an AdSafe flag, which turns on various safety and sandboxing checks. Now in JSLint, it's really the programmer who's the rewriter. The programmer is expected to rewrite their programs to use wrapped versions of these calls and not directly call the unsafe DOM functions. And these wrappers are defined in the AdSafe runtime. So the claim is if you jump through all these hoops, your program is safe. Now, why would you believe that? You'd believe that by looking at the AdSafe runtime. So the AdSafe runtime is a 2,000-line JavaScript library, and despite being, you know, relatively small, it has a large number of assertions, type tests, runtime checks. And so if any one of these is broken, it compromises the security of the entire system. So the question we asked is, you know, is AdSafe truly safe? Right? Just because it has the word safe in the name doesn't make it safe. All right. So what we're going to do with the type-based verification of AdSafe. And before I can really begin, we need to figure out, you know, what does safety actually mean? This isn't written down anywhere. We had to figure this out by staring at the code. And we stared at it really hard. And then we fired off some questions to Doug Crockford. We went to Doug Crockford, the author of AdSafe, for the definition of ad safety. And he agreed. So first, here's what ad safety means. Part one, widgets should not be able to load new code at runtime or cause AdSafe to load code on their behalf. Now, there's many ways to load code at runtime. There's eval, there's document.write, so on and so forth. All of these are banned. Part two, widgets should not be able to obtain direct references to DOM nodes. So ATSIF gives widgets mediated access to the DOM, but these direct references are disallowed. Part three, widgets should not be able to affect the DOM outside their subtree. So ATSIF designates a special container div into which the widget is supposed to draw. The widget is not supposed to be able to trick ATSIF into giving it a wrapped reference to any part of the page outside the container. So this is the definition of ATSafety we came up with. Doug Crockford said, yes, this is correct, but he gave us a fourth property. And here's the fourth property. You know, multiple ads on the same page should not be able to communicate. So this is what we're gonna try to prove. And now that we're ready, let's try to plan our approach. So the goal is to verify the ATSafe runtime. But it really doesn't make sense to look at the ATSafe runtime in isolation, because the ATSafe runtime is always linked against some untrusted widget. But what we can't do is actually analyze any particular widget, because we need to be able to quantify over arbitrary widgets, widgets that we've, you know, haven't seen before, widgets that are going to get written in the future. But the ATSafe runtime is not designed to be linked against an arbitrary JavaScript, arbitrary malicious JavaScript widget. It's the static checks in JS lint that bound the kind of bad things that a widget might do. So to truly understand ATSafe, we need to also develop a model of what JS lint does, how JS lint bounds the bad behavior of a widget. So the ATSafety properties are actually ensured not just by the ATSafe's runtime checks, but also by the static checks in JS lint. There's this interplay between static and dynamic checks that's really important that we need to pin down. So I'm gonna run you through one thread of reasoning that goes between ATSafe and JSLint. So our second property is that widgets should not be able to get direct references to DOM nodes. Think, what's the simplest possible way a widget might do that? Well, a widget might simply write down the name of a DOM node to get a reference to it. But JSLint statically ensures that widgets cannot do that. What ATSafe has instead is this wrapper around the underlying DOM nodes. It calls them bunches. It has raw DOM elements in this array, the underscore underscore nodes underscore underscore field, and it has a number of wrapper functions that manipulate this array in a safe way. So here's what an untrusted widget might try to do. It might try to simply pull out the underscore nodes field. I mean, JavaScript has no notion of private field, but it's the job of the JSLint static checker to ensure that field names that begin and end with underscore are private. All right, so this basic attack is not going to work. So perhaps there's a way that it can trick one of these wrapper functions, such as append, into returning the underscore DOM field. So now it's the ATSafe runtime's job to ensure that these wrapper functions are robust and cannot be tricked with any malicious payloads. We're going to see that breakdown shortly. All right, so with that in mind, let's move on to the first part of our task, which is to model JSLint. So if you play around with JSLint and try to get some programs past it, you'll find that it admits all the basic JavaScript values, strings, numbers, Boolean, so forth. So what I'm gonna build up here at the bottom of the slide is this type, which we call the widget type, which is this giant union of all the values that that JSLint admits. So all the basic JavaScript values are perfectly fine and safe for untrusted widgets to manipulate. Okay, so that's not very interesting, but you know, JSLint also lets you write down objects. In fact, you can write down nested objects. So I'm growing my widget type here to include objects. And so this is a funny kind of object type. You'll see that the star here, the way to read it is that star denotes arbitrary fields. So JSLint lets you create, you know, just about any field name you like in an object. Now that isn't entirely true. For example, we know that the nodes field, ads should not be able to pull out the underscore nodes field because it's used to store sensitive DOM elements. And you'll find there's a couple of other sort of bad words that ads cannot use in their programs and can't use as field names, such as prototype, such as caller, which lets you walk the call stack. So what I'm gonna do is gonna give nodes the underscore nodes field a very specific type. It can't be an arbitrary untrusted value. It has to be an array of DOM nodes. And I'm gonna mark things like caller and prototype with a skull and crossbones. So really the way to read star is that star is any field name except the field names that are explicitly listed. Okay, so this really is the key technical detail in our type system, the ability to refer to all field names by star and marks and sort of blacklist certain fields name. certain fields with stuffs with skull and crossbones. There's a couple of other details. We need to model functions. Now, in JavaScript, functions are merely objects, and the way they're specified is you know, you can think of them as objects with a distinguished code field. So we add that to our widget type as well. And we also have to account for built-in objects, you know, arrays, regular expressions that JSLint admits. So we build up in the prototype field of objects this union of allowed built-in prototypes. So what this widget type is, it truly is a model of all the untrusted values that widgets are permitted to manipulate. But what we really need to talk about is not our model, but of the actual JSLint program that's out there. So JSLint, as I said, it doesn't just ensure rat safety. It also has a bunch of hygiene checks. Like, it makes sure that all your semicolons are in place, that your code is properly indented, things of that sort. Our widget type doesn't model that, and that really has nothing to do with safety and security. So we make the following claim. We claim that typable widgets subsume widgets that pass JSLint. So what this lets us do is we're going to make very precise, formal type-based arguments about typable widgets with the widget type, and because they subsume JSLinted widgets, our arguments apply to linted programs in the wild. So we think this is really important because what it says is that you don't have to use our type system. You can continue to use JSLint, assuming this inclusion is true. And no, it's not going to be quite true until we fix it. All right, so that's our model of JSLint using this widget type. So we can move on to our actual goal, which is to verify the AdSafe runtime. Now, the AdSafe runtime has many, many little wrapper functions. I'm going to show you just one of them. So window.setTimeout is a built-in DOM function. You give it a callback and a delay, it executes the callback after the delay milliseconds have passed. But it has this sort of bonus feature. If you give it a string instead, it'll eval that string, use that as the body of a function, and and use that as the callback. So if you give a widget direct access to window.setTimeout, you can use it to load arbitrary code and break down all the safety properties we're after. So here's what AdSafe does. What AdSafe does is it instead builds an abstraction around window.setTimeout called AdSafe.later. It really acts as a filter on top of window.setTimeout. It ensures that it's never called with any value that's not a function. So it's our job to verify that this filter is correctly in place. Now, this is a pretty straightforward filter, but there's many other more sophisticated checks in AdSafe that could be broken. So here's how we tackle it. In our type environment, we give setTimeout an extraordinarily restrictive type. You can see here that the type of setTimeout restricts the callback argument to being only a function. So the type prevents it from ever being applied with a string. Similarly, eval here is marked with a skull and crossbones. It's a little small, sorry. So eval can never be called because it's not really given the type. It's marked with a skull and crossbones. So this is great, and the technical trick is accounting for the fact that at the top of the function, the callback supplied by the widget is this arbitrary widget type value, but at the bottom here, after the conditional, the type of callback has changed from being completely arbitrary widget type value that might be a string or a number to a very specific type, a function type. So what we need to do is account for this sort of if split, as we call it. This is just one kind of if split that we handle. Our paper and some earlier work discusses the other if splitting patterns that we see in AdSafe. So there's this, there's this fun interaction between type checking and flow analysis that's going on here. So this is just one abstraction that AdSafe defines. Let's look at the big picture. So the big picture is, to understand AdSafe, you need to understand the JSLinted widget. Now, the widget will have a number of functions, and these functions call and return each other. And we know that, because of the widget type, we know that the values passed between these functions are all widget type values. Now, this is not the only thing that widgets do. Widgets also call functions defined in the AdSafe runtime. And for AdSafe to protect the abstractions and guarantees set up by JSLint, the values it passes back and forth to widgets need to also be widget typed. Now, internally, you're going to have some functions in some helper functions in AdSafe that work, with arrays of DOM elements, for example. And that's totally okay so long as at the interface, all functions have the type widget arrow widget. So to do any useful work, the AdSafe runtime obviously calls into the DOM as well, where it definitely manipulates these unsafe DOM elements. And again, that's totally fine so long as at the interface, all functions have the type widget arrow widget. Since DOM nodes are not widget typable, this ensures that direct references to DOM nodes are never leaked through the AdSafe runtime. So these are our two. These are the two big pieces of the puzzle. We model JSLint as a type system using this widget type, and we type check AdSafe with this widget type at the interface between the untrusted widget and the AdSafe runtime. So the question is, is any of this actually true? Does this model actually work? Because if there is a discrepancy, either we're modeling it wrong, or there's a genuine bug in AdSafe or JSLint. So let's watch this breakdown. So we built a test case where a program passed JSLint but was not typable in our widget type checker. So here you see a fragment of a widget. It's building an object that looks like a DOM node. So it has a tag name field, it has an append child function, and the body of the append child function is sort of poised for attack, right? What it's trying to do is get a reference to the window object and call eval. And if we can somehow trick AdSafe into thinking that this is a real DOM node, we'll be good to go. So if we try to create a bunch with an underscore nodes field, it gets rejected by JSLint. But it turned out that if you create a bunch with nodes in single quotes, not double quotes, but single quotes, then it was accepted by JSLint, and the attack worked. So I think the high-level point here is that when you have a generic type system, you simply can't build a tool that special cases on sort of three different ways of writing down the nodes field. You really have to be generic, because any field could have been marked bad. But AdSafe, since it's sort of ad hoc and designed exactly for this single purpose, is able to get away with. Is vulnerable to bugs of these sort that happen when you have a much more specialized tool. So the second bug I'd like to show you was in the AdSafe runtime itself. So what we have here is AdSafe wrapper for setting styles and DOM elements. And when we tried to type check this piece of code, we got a type error here saying expected string got received widget. So what's going on here is that there's certain style values that can actually cause JavaScript to load untrusted, that can actually result in loading JavaScript code. And what you have here is a regular expression-based check to make sure that the value never contains the string URL. But what we realize here is that value, since it's an arbitrary widget, since it's an arbitrary untrusted value, may not actually be a string. It may be, for example, an object. In fact, what you can do, and this is a well-known trick, you can create an object with a stateful toString method that first returns something safe, such as font, and the second time, when it's actually used, returns an untrusted value that loads up. So this is a Firefox-specific hack. It loads up an XBL resource. You can also use this to attack Internet Explorer. So it's a simple time of use bug, and the reason we caught it is because we have a very, very simple type for regular expression testing. Regular expression tests are restricted to only work on strings. If we had admitted something more complicated, if we had admitted the implicit coercion that goes on, we would have missed this bug. So the fix, by the way, is obvious. It's to insert a simple check string assertion here. It was also inserted in 16 other places. Now, I don't know if those were all exploitable, but there was certainly some sort of unexpected, inconsistent behavior going on there. So these are our two main code execution bugs. We found there are a number of other sort of inconsistencies reported by our type checker that Doug Crockford happily fixed. So with those bugs reported, AdSafe actually type checked. So let's see how we did on our ad safety properties. So the first property we were out to prove is that widgets should not be able to load code at runtime. So we were able to prove this, right? Eval is marked with a skull and crossbones. SetTimeout has this very restrictive type, so that's easily established. The second property is that widgets should not be able to get direct references to DOM nodes. Remember, all values manipulated by widgets are widget typed. All functions in the AdSafe runtime's interface have the type widget arrow widget. DOM nodes are not widget typable, therefore, untrusted code never gets a handle on a DOM node. So the third property, widgets should not be able to affect the DOM outside the subtree. We weren't quite able to prove this. The main reason is that JSLint works not just with JavaScript, but it also checks the HTML accompanying the widget. Our tools are only work with JavaScript, so it's sort of beyond the scope of our work. And the fourth property is weird. So we found more bugs that actually break property number four. But and when we reported them, this property was retracted. So I guess AdSafe no longer claims to establish this property. You know, take it as you will. I think it's, in fact, the other web sandboxes, such as Kaha, don't quite claim to support this property, too. I think the high-level point is that it's sort of sad that the state of language is such that it's so hard to establish a basic isolation property such as this. So I think at the end, we can declare AdSafe. We have two caveats. There's 11 lines of unverified code out of 2,000. I'd be happy to show that to you. And the subtree property is not quite verified because it requires analyzing HTML in addition to JavaScript. So let me conclude with two points. So as a programming language guy, I believe it's important to not just, you know, state say verify. These claims are backed with theorems and proofs. But doing proofs for JavaScript is extraordinarily hard. It's much larger than your average PL research subject. So what we do instead is that we de-sugar JavaScript into a core semantics that we call LambdaJS, and our proofs are over this smaller core language instead. The interesting thing here is that de-sugaring is fully implemented, and it's tested against a portion of the Mozilla JavaScript test suite. And this is what gives us confidence that our proofs and our tools are correct. And finally, in general, when you're building a safe sandbox or any security critical system, there's various patterns you're going to employ, such as a list of band names, or runtime assertions, or field names that begin and end with underscore are private. These are the patterns that you do need to use to build these systems. And they're really, really hard to get right. But they can all be expressed and checked very succinctly using types. So the next time you build one of these systems, you should ask your local PL experts to build you a type system or some sort of static verifier that can actually ensure that you got them right. Thanks for listening. And I'll be happy to take any questions you might have.
So I've got a question for you. So I thought it was really interesting how far you guys were able to make it. But the question I have is, if we assume that these ad safety properties are good properties that we want to have, is there a different programming language we could be using? Or could you imagine designing a new one specifically for these types of things? Or do you think these subset of JavaScript approaches are the right way to go about it?
That's a good question. So there's a couple of ways of thinking about it. So one way to think about these subsets of JavaScript is, in fact, as new programming languages with just a JavaScript-like syntax. So JSLint is not too sophisticated. It requires you to rewrite your code, but systems such as Kaha involve sort of program rewriting. And there's a question of what it would take to, and so you can truly think of the source language that programmers program in as just looking like JavaScript, but not quite being JavaScript itself. I think verifying one of those systems would be interesting. There's some very simple high-level properties in the source language, and they need to be preserved as you compile down into the target language, which is JavaScript. And to me, that sounds like type preserving compilation. So I think the technique scales to that. And in general, if you're going to compile to JavaScript, that might be a good idea, but you do need to ensure that your translation is correct as well. And that's really hard to do. Yes?
Very impressive work, and thanks for the talk.
Thank you.
The one thing that concerns me is starting from this banned list rather than having a whitelist, and especially when browsers can add their own new features of JavaScript that you may not know about and that may be unsafe. So the question is if it would be feasible at all to start from, instead of a banned list, star in a banned list, to start from here's a whitelist of things that we think ads should be able to do and know are safe.
So you're absolutely right. So there's a banned list of property names, but there is fortunately a white list of elements that you can construct. So for example, if some browser decides to add some kind of crazy new DOM element in the future, we just won't be able to construct that. Now there's a previous work by out of Berkeley, Matthew Finifter and others, that showed that one of AdSafe's assumptions is broken on many web pages. AdSafe assumes, since it has a blacklist, it assumes that the containing web page itself is not inserting other properties that might contain eval. And that turned out to be broken on about a third of the websites. The more sophisticated sandboxes, such as Kaha, they sort of require full control of your universe and are able to do what you want, which is follow a whitelisting approach. So, blacklisting is not future-proof. I think that's the real problem with it. But we were verifying what AdSafe was out to do, and we inherited that flow.
Hi, John Krizzle from Illinois. One thing that wasn't clear to me during your presentation was exactly what was proved formally versus what was shown through experimentation. So, for example, it looked like the showing that JSLint and your type system that your type system subsumes JSLint looked like more like an experimental thing instead of a formalism thing. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. Sure. So you're right. That was an experimental thing. That was the only experimental thing in our work. Everything else comes back with proofs. Now, you have to understand, as you probably know, that we are still always working in the model when you're proving things. So there is a model of the JavaScript environment that you need to look at and be certain that you've got right. So for example, I could have, forgotten to put a skull and crossbones on eval. And if I had done that, the proof wouldn't have held water. So you do need to look at our environmental assumptions in any kind of formal proof to believe it. But the only real experimental work was in the inclusion of JSLint in the widget type checker.
Right. It seems that experiment is actually quite useful because what that does is it actually compares actual implementations. But would it be possible to formally show that what JSLint does, or at least what it's supposed to do, is a subset of what your type checker is supposed to do?
Would it be possible to prove the inclusion instead of just testing it? So maybe. It would be a lot of work. I think there's a couple of ways of looking at it. I think really what you can do is stop using JSLint and use a type checker instead. I think that would be the right way to go about it. I mean, you really shouldn't build these ad hoc checks. Once you write down a type specification of what the secure sublanguage is, you can use that to build a type checker. And those are simpler than a collection of ad hoc tokenization checks.
Okay, thank you.